Okay, good morning. Just to recap a little bit from yesterday and to get us up to speed. So we were talking about a very fundamental question, essentially the first machlokas rishonim in the Talmud. The first machlokas rishonim ever, if we count from the way it's arranged in Shas. It's a very practical issue, an issue that's apparently even more practical from the days of the rishonim. The question was that the Mishnah delineates, it starts to delineate, obviously it's a much more involved process, the question of when is the end of Zman Kriya Shema at night, and that's what most of the Mishnah is about, but the opening of the Mishnah, which doesn't get as much attention, is the question of when does it start, when's the earliest time we can recite Kriya Shema at night, and it's not very clear from Mishnah, because it uses a clue rather than saying it straight out, which is a topic of discussion that Gemara is going to have, but it essentially emerges that the earliest time for Kriya Shema at night is what we call Seisa Kochav, when it's fully dark outside. And how you define that is a topic we'll get to later, but for now we'll use that term of Seisa Kochav. So the Rishonim raised the question that poses a problem to our practice, certainly nowadays, but even already in the time of the Rishonim, that we know that shuls very often daven Ma'ariv before dark, or before Seis at least. And when they do that, they do the same Ma'ariv that they do when they daven at 10 o'clock. They say Kriya Shema, and then Shmona Esrei. So that seems to go against what the Mishnah is saying, that Shema only starts from Seis HaKochavim. And it's certainly true this time of year, when we daven early, especially on Friday afternoon, if not every other day of the week, but especially in the time of the Rishonim, when there was no artificial lighting outside, so it wasn't safe to be out on the streets after dark, so all the more so the shuls would tend to daven early. And we noted yesterday that Rashi's language just says, how do we read it in Beis HaKnesses, makes it sound like Beis HaKnesses, you understand already that that's already not after Seis HaKochavim, they weren't out at night. It doesn't say specifically the times when they daven early in the Beis HaKnesses, but apparently it's understood that the Beis HaKnesses is not a place where they were at after Seis HaKochavim, and that they were davening Ma'ariv there a little bit early. So that's a central question, and we started to explain a little bit the structure of Rashi and Tosfos yesterday on this issue, a couple of interesting points, where really the central question is going to be, are we Yotze with that early davening and the Shema that takes place then? And that's really what Rashi and Tosfos are fighting about, even though a lot of the ink is spent on a technicality, but it's spent on how you address the backup plan of the situation rather than that fundamental question, but that's really what they're arguing about. And as we started to say, the halacha doesn't follow either of them. We don't follow either Rashi or Tosfos, but we actually follow a third approach. Now, Rashi's approach almost makes it, but then Rashi throws in a very controversial sentence which separates him from what we practically do. Rashi essentially seems to take the position that the early davening is not going to do it for Kriya Shema, based on our Mishnah. So that being the case, if you say that it is effective, okay, you have no problems. If you say that it's not effective, then we have two problems, two separate questions you have to answer. First question is, why do we bother when we daven early, if we daven before Tzei, so certainly if we daven before Shkia, if you're going to tell me we're not Yotze without Kriya Shema, why do we bother going through the whole process of saying Shema the same way as we do at the 10 o'clock Ma'ariv? So Rashi's answer to that is that it's Kidei Ba'amo Tzvila Mitoch Debrei Torah, and it's essentially comparable to Ashrei. It's just like at Mincha time, we don't just jump into Shmona Esrei, but we first have Ashrei first. The Mishnah in the fifth parak says that it's not right to start davening when you don't have your mind properly prepared, so you should have some Debrei Torah first, but not a very involved Sosa Choshen that's going to keep you all distracted and thinking about other things. But the psukim like Ashrei, which you're obligated to say three times a day anyway, is a better way to focus, and Shema would serve that same purpose. So even if it's not yet time for the mitzvah of Shema, Shema serves this purpose of keeping us focused. And we spent some time yesterday talking about the fact that it's interesting that Rashi could have said a much easier answer. Rashi could have said that what about Smichus Gul with Tzvila, that the structure of davening is supposed to be Shema then Shmona Esrei because of the brachos that link the two, the bracha of Gal Yisrael. That would be enough reason for us to say the normal Ma'ariv, even if it's not the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. And we know that we spent some time on this, that we can make two observations from what Rashi is not saying on that point. One, perhaps...
Gal Yisrael is not at night.
Well, Gal Yisrael is, well, day, we have stuff in between, we have Shkivenu, but the Gal Yisrael is mentioned at night, it's just that there's a little bit more in between. Right, so it's Samuch enough. What's the difference between Ma'ariv and Shacharis? That's a separate sugya we'll get to a little bit later, but at least for now, there is a Gal Yisrael that's supposed to be before Ma'ariv as part of also Tosfos' objection, and that on the surface could have been enough reason to daven Ma'ariv in its normal format before, even before this Ma'ariv Kriya Shema. So what it seems like is that there's two observations to make. One is that maybe Rashi holds that you cannot have Smichus Gula Tzvila without the real Shema, the Shema that you're doing Yotze with, itself an interesting point, and that could have implications for the morning, when, let's say, if you're davening in a minyan, normally Shabbos morning is when this comes up, which is going to be after Zman and Kriya Shema, on the question of whether you can be Yotze Shema first before davening, and then have your davening, which is going to have something to do with Tfilah, which many of us are makel to assume that you can, but there are those who machmer assume that it's a problem. Maybe Rashi here is similar to that view. And then the question also is, so what about the obligation of Smichus Gula Tzvila at night, if it's not effective in that way? So maybe Rashi holds you only have such an obligation when there is a Chiyuv Kriya Shema. So the same way in Mincha time, there's no such obligation because there's no Shema. So too, pre-dark Ma'ariv might have the same status. So that's two observations from the first part of Rashi. Then, here's the very controversial part. So if you are not Yotze Kriya Shema, so then here's a practical question. So when are you Yotze Kriya Shema? What do you do about that basic obligation? So if Rashi had just stopped here and said you have to say it again, then he would have been the winner in the story, essentially, as far as Halacha L'maisa, because that's basically what we do. Right, you go to early Minyan Friday night, so they announce in Shul after Ma'ariv, please repeat the three paragraphs of Shema afterwards. So far that would have been consistent with what Rashi says. You're not Yotze with the early Shema, say Shema again later. What's controversial about Rashi and what takes away from what we do l'halacha? The fact that he says, how are you Yotze? You're Yotze with Kriya Shema al Hamita. That when you go to sleep at night and you say Shema in your bed, that's what you use in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Kriya Shema.
That practice we do when we daven Ma'ariv before Shkia.
Mm-hmm. Not only before, even after Shkia.
Most people daven before,
right, so then they're also supposed to repeat Kriya. Maybe the Shul doesn't announce it, but they are supposed to repeat Kriya Shema before it says. So then that's also in the category of and Friday night during the winter, usually also davening after Shkia, and still you're supposed to maybe they don't announce, but you're still supposed to repeat then as well.
What's very important. What's controversial about Rashi saying that you don't say the Shema with the Kriya Shema Lamita?
Oh, so that's a good segue into Tosfos. So Tosfos is what tells us what's so controversial. And that's basically what we were up to yesterday, is we just delineated what Tosfos' four objections were. And we noted, just to get to pay attention to the structural issue here, that it's surprising that Tosfos spends so much time attacking the backup plan, because the backup plan is really a detail. What about the fundamental question they're really arguing about is whether you are Yotze or not. And the backup plan shouldn't really be the focus of the attention.
Why couldn't they just put the other two parshiyos in Kriya Shema?
Oh, so that's also part of the question. So if that was the issue, and that might be where Tosfos' fourth question was discussed yesterday, that the fourth question is a little hard to understand. So what are the four questions? So the four questions... Right, so that's what are the four questions that Tosfos has? So one question is that it's only one paragraph long, which, again, Rashi is clearly aware of. Rashi says that it's only one parsha, so it's not like they came up with something that Rashi never thought of, but that was one question. A second question is, there's no brachos. And we discussed yesterday a little bit the role of brachos Kriya Shema. Is it really what it sounds like, the brachos that are connected to Kriya Shema, or are they really not connected to Kriya Shema? Are they really a tefillah, which happens to be structured around Kriya Shema and doesn't necessarily have to bother us? But that's another issue that Tosfos brings up. The third issue that Tosfos brings up is a little more complicated, is that according to Rashi, we've changed the psak. This is a Gemara on Daf Dalet. We'll get to it in more detail at the time. But the Gemara says there was a machlokus about what should be the view regarding Ma'ariv and Smichus Gula Tzvila. But everyone agrees that when it comes to Shacharis, there's an obligation to Smichus Gula Tzvila. When it comes to Ma'ariv, it was a machlokus in the Gemara. One opinion says, yes, there is Smichus Gula Tzvila by Ma'ariv, and that's the view that we follow. What's the other opinion that we don't follow? The other opinion is that the whole structure of Ma'ariv should have been different. It's called Tfilos Be'emtza Tiknum, that we should have our day framed by Shema, first thing in the morning, last thing at night. And in the middle, Tfilos Be'emtza, we'll have davening in the middle. We'll have Shachar Shmoneh Esrei, Mincha Shmoneh Esrei, and Ma'ariv Shmoneh Esrei. The whole structure would have been reversed. That Ma'ariv would have been flipped, Shmoneh Esrei first, and then Shema. And we reject that opinion. So So says Tosfos, according to you, Rashi, you've brought back the opinion that we rejected. You're saying that we'll daven Ma'ariv of Shemoneh Esrei first, and then the mitzvah of Shema will be performed afterwards. And then we bother having a whole machlokes about if you're just going to put it back into practice, the opinion that's not followed. That was the third objection Tosfos has. And the fourth objection, which might relate to the question you're asking, because it's not really clear what bothers Tosfos so much, but Tosfos says that this whole idea of Kriya Shema Lamita, but the Gemara is going to have a whole discussion about that a little bit later on, not so far from here, and that the Gemara says that Kriya Shema Lamita was an institution to protect from the damaging forces, whatever that means, that there was a way of having some extra skula at night, and it sounds like from the Gemara that any psukim could have been effective. The Gemara says that a Talmid Chacham is not obligated to say it. Somebody who's already involved in learning other psukim at that time, so he doesn't have to specifically say the psukim of Shema, let alone all three paragraphs.
Yeah, we don't do it in Pesach.
Yeah, Pesach is a little discussion of what we leave out, the Leil Shimur in part. We mentioned not such a famous position yesterday that suggested that that's why Shavuos night we daven late, because maybe if the whole question why there is this minig to daven late Shavuos night, then maybe it's because of this view that we fulfill a mitzvah Kriya Shema with Kriya Shema Lamita, and since Shavuos night many people stay up all night, they don't say Kriya Shema Lamita because they don't go to sleep, so then the shuls aren't willing to daven early and to have people miss out on Shema, which is not the most common explanation of that practice. It's an interesting idea based on this essentially this first Rashi. So that's Tosfos's four objections to Rashi's view. And again, it's interesting because none of that goes to the substance. It all goes to, since you're not Yotzei, the early Shema, so this is what you do instead. So if Tosfos doesn't like what you do instead, so they should really, instead of arguing on the core opinion, they should say, well, here's a different backup plan. Do what we do in 2011 and say the three paragraphs of Shema before you go to bed. Say it after Sefer Kochavim at 9:30 at night. When you realize it's Sefer Kochavim, you're going to be up for another 3 hours to say the three paragraphs then. So why does Tosfos not take that approach? It seems that both Rashi and Tosfos are both working from the same perspective, that Klal Yisrael's doing the right thing. We've got to figure out how it makes sense. It's very interesting. This whole first machlokes we've shown him, this whole debate, they don't say anything different than each other in terms of practice. They both agree with the details of what's happening. And if they both agree that you're going to shul and davening, let's say, before Shkia, or certainly before Seis, and that you're saying Shema and Shmona Esrei then, and that you're going home, doing whatever you do, and saying Kriya Shmona Mita. They don't argue one iota with each other on what the practice is. It's just that Rashi says that the Kriya Shema Lamita, that's when you're Yotzei Shema, because you weren't Yotzei in Shul. And Tosfos says, no, you can't be Yotzei with Kriya Shema Lamita. It has all these four problems, so it must be that you were Yotzei in Shul.
None of them said that you repeat.
Right, so the other Rishonim do. But between Rashi and Rabbeinu Yonah and the other Rishonim, you do find that. But between Rashi and Tosfos, they're not talking about that opinion. So they essentially are talking about, they apparently are working off the assumption that Klal Yisrael must be doing the right thing, and how we assign the different parts of what's happening, that's the question. So what is the view of Tosfos as far as how does he get around the Mishnah? The Mishnah essentially says that you have to wait till Tzitzik HaChavim, and again, says this is very loose because it doesn't say those words, it gives you a clue, which the Gemara identifies as Tzitzik HaChavim. So how do we get around that? So Tosfos has two approaches. We'll mention the simpler one first, and then the more complicated one, which is the topic of more discussion. So one view is the view of the Ri, that, like we said, the Tzitzik HaChavim is a little mysterious in the Mishnah. It just says the time from the Kohanim going in to eating Truma, which the Gemara explains is Tzitzik HaChavim. But then the Gemara is going to quote the view of some other Tanaim, that there are some other opinions as to when exactly it is. So maybe we actually follow a different opinion, which pegs the time a little bit earlier. That's very difficult for a lot of reasons, especially because certainly in our practice today, whenever we're davening early, there's no attempt to peg that at some point that's consistent with one of these other clues that we find from the Tanaim. So that's it would seem to be very lucky if it's actually going to match a different view as the Zman Kriya Shema. It's the view of Rabbeinu Tam that is particularly fascinating. What is Rabbeinu Tam's view? He suggests that this is based on a Gemara later on, a Gemara in the fourth parak. A very well-known Gemara. People often learn the fourth parak of Brachos as their opening Gemara, in whatever grade in elementary school. So there is a fascinating debate there, which Rabbeinu Tam suggests that's the key to everything here. What does the Gemara say over there? There is a machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim, which is really about the time of Mincha. When does Mincha end? Does it end, you can daven Mincha up until dark? Or do we say it goes up until Plag HaMincha? That's the view of Rabbi Yehuda. Right, Plag HaMincha, the day is broken up into 12 parts, into 12 halachic hours, we call Shalos Manios. So Plag HaMincha is an hour and a quarter before the last hour before dark. And we use that as a marker for other things. So, for example, especially in practice, when we talk about bringing Shabbos in early on Friday, so we assume Plag HaMincha is the earliest time you can do it. So once it's Plag HaMincha ready, so then some halachos of night start to apply. There are some views that you can start. You can count the Sfiras Omer from that point in time. And that's the time when you can start to maybe very broadly call things night. You can start to bring in Shabbos, etc., etc.
Always been fascinated. How did the Chachamim make these times before the clock so long? It's an hour and a quarter before.
Well, it's a halachic hour. That essentially, that's not 60 minutes.
They looked up at the sun, they knew that's an hour and a quarter before.
No, they can figure out when the sun comes up and when the sun goes down.
Okay, fine.
Right? And then you divide that into 12.
You
look at the sun and you figure out what's a halachic. It's a 12th, or in this case, a 12th plus a quarter of a 12th.
In other words, people had to know the position.
5:48.
So
yeah.
The sun had a red calendar, but they didn't know. I don't know what time the sun's
going to
set that day unless you know from the previous.
Oh, yeah, they, ever since Adam Arishon, they figured out how to cycle.
But how do you know when Plag HaMincha? They knew that the sun would be at this spot right there.
Yeah, same.
Plag HaMincha?
Yeah, the same way before we got so dependent on clocks. You could figure out where the sun was holding. It's probably a little bit less precise, but precise.
If
you
were ahead. Waiting
as long as Rabbeinu Tam. Oh, so that's a very good. Yeah. So that's a big story. That's actually a sigillah on Beis Midbeis. So
we'll get. Bottom line, how did.
So I want to discuss that when we get to Beis Midbeis. Let's talk about Rabbeinu Tam. That's an important question. So let's try to talk about that for Beis Midbeis. For now, well, let's assume we know when these times are. Plag HaMincha, Tzeis, Tzkiyah, all of that. Somehow we know. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, that's the time when Mincha is over. And Chachamim say until dark. Right. So when we talked about the Sugya a few months ago, right? So the ambiguity that's involved in it, right? So how do we paskin on that machlokas? What's the Gemara's conclusion on Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim? And the Gemara has a fascinating statement, which we'll try to talk about a little bit. Says the Gemara, who's right, Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim? Shneihem. What does the Gemara say? Hash to the loit mar hilchasa lo kemar velo kemar. Since we have not established the halacha, not like this view or like that view. So what's the halacha? The avid kemar avid the avid kemar avid. That you can follow one opinion, you can follow the other opinion. They're both good. Pluralism, exactly. A very striking example of pluralism. It's very unusual for Shas in general to take that type of view. There are some parallels we'll discuss in a second. This is a particularly open view, so to speak, of how to paskin, that both views apparently are good. So that would be Huda says until Plag, and Chachamim say until dark, and the halacha is like either one. Very unusual type of view for the Gemara to take. So apparently what emerges from Rabbeinu Tam, the language is a little complicated, what essentially emerges is that, so why are people davening Ma'ariv early and saying Shema early? Because of the view of Rabbi Yehuda, that Plag HaMincha is the cutoff. But sometimes we daven Mincha up until dark. That's the view of Chachamim. You have the right to follow either view. So what's going on there? That's itself very striking. And there's another major, major detail that Rabbeinu Tam is assuming, which is far from obvious. And this is a topic of a long tshuva in the Beis Halevi. The Beis Halevi in Chelek Aleph, it's the Mitas, is a long tshuva explaining the view of Rabbeinu Tam. We won't get into everything he says here, because it's a very complicated pilpul. You should just be aware of the question, that Rabbeinu Tam already is making two leaps. He's making, first of all, the leap, which is not explicit in the Gemara, that when Mincha ends, Ma'ariv starts. How do you know that's true? Maybe there's a no man's land in between. Maybe there's a dead zone. How do we know that just because mincha time is over, that Ma'ariv time automatically comes in? There's nothing in their inherent natures that makes them dependent on each other in any obvious way. If we assume that they're patterned after the Karbanos, so then it doesn't necessarily lead us to that conclusion. I have to figure out why he should assume that that's the case. And the Beis Halevi has a long tilpul to try to explain why that's the case, just so you should be aware. We won't go into it in detail, but that's one of the questions. And then the second question, perhaps even stronger, is that, okay, let's say for whatever reason we know that that's true, that Mincha ends and Ma'ariv starts. But why should we assume that Shema comes along with that? Our whole premise of our whole discussion is that Ma'ariv is not automatically the time for Shema. We've already been discussing, that's the whole opening part of the discussion, that the Shul should daven Ma'ariv at some time which apparently is acceptable for Ma'ariv, and yet is not as Zman Shchiva for Kriya Shema. So we're ready, that's the whole issue, that we're not assuming that they're connected. So why should we say that just because Rabbi Yehuda believes that Plaka Mincha ends Mincha, that it somehow brings in Ma'ariv with the ability to be Yotzei Kriya Shema? So that's a very major issue which deserves some discussion. Again, I would direct you to the Beis Halevi. But there are a number of other issues that this Tosis is bringing up. One of them was the issue that got the Shagis Aryeh very upset. Shagis Aryeh says he can't accept the view of Rabbeinu Tam because, he says, Rabbeinu Tam is making a very flawed assumption for the following reason. He says, and we'll try to discuss it as much as we can today, and we'll probably finish it up a little bit Friday morning, that there is a very fundamental flaw in what's going on here, according to Shagis Aryeh's understanding. Shagis Aryeh, if you're familiar with his style, he was fearless in terms of Rishonim. He took on the Rishonim, he didn't like the position, he just decimated it. So he said that in the beginning of the Sefer, in Simon Gimel, so he takes on this Rabbeinu Tam, he says, we can't accept this Rabbeinu Tam, because the Gemara, when it says, David Kemar Avid, you can follow either view. So what's the Gemara talking about? Talking about Shema? No. It's talking about Tefillah. So Tefillah is Adin Darabbanan. So when it comes to Tefillah, so we can apply the rule of Safek Darabbanan Lekula. We can give you this latitude to go in either direction. But Shema? Shema is not Adin Darabbanan. Right, that's what we spent some time discussing last Friday, that our opening introductory discussion, that Shema, according to most of the Rishonim, is a din d'oraisa. Right? The Kesmishna says Zman Kriya Shema. Right? But even the Kesmishna agrees that Shema itself is a din d'oraisa. So to allow that, even the Kesmishna agree that the nighttime opening Zman is presumably also d'oraisa. So why should we have flexibility on the Zman of Shema? We should have flexibility on Tefillah. So we mentioned that there were a handful of Rishonim, a handful of Tosfos here and there, less famous Tosfos, that did take the view, which is a view in the Gemara as well, that Kriya Shema is Drabanan, but that's not the accepted view according to the majority of Rishonim. So says Shagas Aryeh, apparently Rabbeinu Tam is in that list. Apparently Rabbeinu Tam also holds that Shema is Drabanan, and that is not our understanding, therefore he rejects Rabbeinu Tam for that reason. So that's an important question to discuss, is he correct or not? And we'll see if we get up to it for this morning. We may have to continue it Friday, but it ties into the following issue, a very practical issue. And this is discussed in a fascinating way by the Stipler. Stipler in his essays in the beginning of Brachos, the first Stipler in the whole set, they have a whole many, many volumes of the Kilos Yaakov on Shas, so the very first Stipler, the opening piece in the Seches Brachos, the opening piece in Shas. So Stipler takes up a very important practical question. Says that we know that, okay, in terms of davening Mincha after Plag, before Plag, in terms of davening Ma'ariv before dark, before Shkia, let's say. So apparently the Gemara leaves it open. Right? You can follow either view. So what does that mean in terms of an individual switching? So does that mean that you can daven Mincha today after Plag, following the view of Chachamim, and then still daven Ma'ariv before dark, following the view of Yehuda? Can you switch within one day? Right, mix and match, which raises a problem which Tosfos already alludes to, known as Tarte Desasre, right? Two things that contradict each other. And even if that's too much, so what about the switch from one day to the next? So what about today? It works out for me. I can daven mincha at 2 o'clock, and I'll daven ma'ariv before shkia. So I'll keep them in separate zones. I'll daven mincha before plag and ma'ariv after plag. And tomorrow I'm not going to get till mincha until 5 minutes before shkia after plag, and I'll assume like chachamim right. So today I'll follow Rabbi Yehuda, and tomorrow I'll follow chachamim. I won't give them the same day. I'll switch off from one day to the next. Is that permissible? So the Stipler says, fascinating point. It says that it depends on how you understand what this Gemara means, the Ovid Kamar Ovid, the Ovid Kamar Ovid. And he suggests, as I said before, it's kind of an unusual position for Shas to take in terms of how to pasken halacha. So he suggests that we could try to understand a little bit about it by looking at some comparable cases elsewhere in Shas. And he notes, fascinating point, that Rishonim use different models to compare this to. On the one hand, there's the Rush, right over here, the Rush in the beginning of Brachos. On the other hand, there's the Meiri in the fourth paragraph of Brachos, Anakama, and Daf Chafav. And they use different Gemaras to compare what this bit is about. And he suggests that if you look and you understand what those Gemaras are, that will help you to understand what the policy is in terms of switching back and forth between Mincha and Ma'ariv. So we'll be able to do that quickly, is mention what those Gemaras are, and then Friday morning, God willing, in anticipation of early Shabbos, we'll discuss a little bit how it plays out and how it affects those things. So the Gemara that the Rush refers to is a Gemara in Erevin. It's also a very well-known Gemara because one of the conclusions is quoted in a lot of other contexts, even though the details are a little bit obscure. The Gemara there has a debate known as Shedra the Gilgola. So Shedra and Gilgola is a case of a spine and a skull. You have an animal, and you want to know if an animal has a spine that's missing vertebra. So how many vertebra does it have to be missing in order for it to be considered deficient? There's a machlokus between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai.
For kashrus purposes.
So there's two different purposes that it has implications for. One is for kashrus, if it's deficient too much, it's considered to be a trefa. And the other is for tumah purposes, that if it's not a full skeleton, so then it's not metame. So it's machlokus between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, whether one does it or two have to be missing in order to be deficient. And the Nafka Minas is the fascinating thing, is that if you, let's say I say it has to have two missing in order to be deficient, is that a kula or a chumra? So it depends what you're interested in. If you're interested in kashrus, then it's a kula to say that it only becomes trefa later. It's a higher threshold for trefas as a kula for purposes of kashrus. If I'm interested in avoiding tuma, so then it's a chumra to have a higher threshold. So whether it's a kula or a chumra, which side you take here, depends on what issue you're interested in, which is very relevant to what the Gemara goes on to say. The Gemara goes on to say that the halacha is like Beis Hillel. It's a little different than this Gemara, which throws it open. This Gemara says, here we have a preference, the halacha is like Beis Hillel. Who says, I forgot which one is which, but here we show it is the halacha is like Beis Hillel. And then the Gemara goes on to say, but it's acceptable to follow the view of Beis Shammai as well. You can follow Beis Shammai's view, that's fine. But, says the Gemara, what you can't do is mix and match. So I'll take one view for the purposes of trefus, and another view for the purposes of tumah, and contradict yourself. And you might think only, I can't do that to be mako. I can't do that even to be nachma. The Gemara has a kind of harsh language. It says, if you do it to be mako, that's rishus, the Gemara says, a strong statement. And if you do it to be machmir, if you say, well, I'll consider it treif, but also metame, the contradictory position in the direction of chumrah, so then they apply the pasuk in Mishlei, aksil b'chayshah chaylech, that a fool walks around in the dark and trips, he doesn't know what he's doing. So to take a position that makes no sense, even the chumrah, we're not going to advocate that either. So follow Beis Hillel, that's what we recommend. You want to follow Beis Shammai, that's also acceptable. But don't mix and match. Don't take the view that's l'kula in both, and don't take the view that's l'chumra in both. So the Rush invokes Dr. Gemara when talking about this case. In the Erie, we'll just say the case very quickly. It's also a somewhat well-known case, and then Friday morning we'll talk about how the analysis breaks down. That the Meiri quotes the Mishnah in Taras, in the fifth paragraph of Taras, which is also quoted in Gemara Mesachim on Daf Yud, that the Mishnah says that if you have two paths, in the case of Shnei Shvilin, you have two paths that all take you to one location, and we know that one path was Tameh and one path was not, and we don't know which one. So if somebody comes to the rabbi and he says, Rabbi, I walked on path A. I want to know, am I Tameh or am I Tar? So the rabbi has the right to say, Safik Tumah Bershus HaRabim, the rule is Tar. He has the right to declare this person Tar. Let's say, next day, somebody comes and says, Rabbi, I walked on the other path. I walked on path B. So the rabbi apparently still has the right to say, you're Tar. Safik Tumah Bershus HaRabim is Tar. Even though we know, intellectually, they can't both be Tar. One of the paths was bad. These two together covered both paths. Still, the rabbi has the right to issue the same psak to both of them and say, Safek Tumah Bershus HaRabim is Tar. It's just if they come together, let's say they race, okay, so I'll take path A, he'll take path B, and the rabbi's in the middle, and they show up together, and they say, okay, I took path A, he took path B, so then that's too much, says the Mishnah, that then we say that you can't declare them both Tar, when one of them went on the Tameh path and they come together. It's not clear what the advocated solution is, but you can't say something to Mishra Sarabim so easily. And then the Erie invokes that model when talking about this whole question of Mincha and Meyer of mixing and matching. And what does that mean, Lahalacha? We'll discuss that guy well on Friday morning. Have a fantastic day.